Mark Johnson, station manager and radio personality at Pioneer 90.1 FM, is with us this morning. Good morning, Mark.
Some days I have more personality than others. It just depends on how much sleep I get, I guess. But Glenn, we've got a special guest in the studio here today, and it was my birthday here a couple days ago, and my wife and my daughter got me a Fitbit. And so I've been looking for inspiration as to how to get fit. And I think that the guy sitting next to me is a great inspiration for this. We have Bill Pierce with us. And Bill is a dual U.S. and Canadian citizen, makes his home in Burlington, Ontario. But for the last month or
3 months,
has been riding his bicycle from Mexico to Canada.
Right.
And it's a familiar route that you're on, Bill.
I'm on Highway 59, which passes through here, and actually it's one of the border-to-border routes, and ever since I joined it at about Houston, Texas, I've been following Highway 59 north, and I will be finishing in Winnipeg on Sunday.
And you're on a recumbent bicycle.
Right. Which, for those who don't know, is a bike that basically you kind of sit down in and sit back in like a lawn chair. You still have to pedal it, and your pedals are out in front of you.
But it saves the back, I would imagine.
Yes, I mean, you sit back into it. I tell people it's like a pedaling lawn chair. Your hands are still down at your sides, and you just go ahead and pedal it down the road.
The next best thing would be those lawn chairs. There's that movie where the guy puts the helium balloon on his lawn chair.
Right.
Donnie Deck chair, or whatever
yeah.
his name was.
Or Up, you know, the Disney movie.
Yeah, there too.
So why did you decide to do this, Bill?
Well, it's been a bucket list idea, I suppose. I've had it for about 10 years and hadn't done anything. I know lots of people, there's thousands of people ride their bikes coast to coast, mostly west to east because of the wind. And there are a few people who have done it north to south, but almost entirely along the coast. I didn't know anybody who'd ridden up the middle of the country. And I had this idea about following spring north, kind of the slow progress of spring, which has somewhat worked out and somewhat not worked out for me. But as I say, I've had the idea, and I finally said to myself and I said to my wife, either I'm going to do this or I'm not. I'm going to get too old and I can't. So I thought, this is the year.
And at first I read on your website that you thought about walking it, but there were long stretches where walking 50 miles a day.
Yeah, I mean, I did my research. Spring moves north at an average, and it's just a number, obviously, of 19 miles a day. And I thought, well, I can walk 19 miles a day. Yes, I can, but I wouldn't have been doing anything except for walking, and there aren't towns neatly spaced out every 19 miles. So I've gone as far as 65 miles without a place to stay, and that you just can't walk that, so the bicycle seemed the next best thing.
And you mentioned the south to north, so you've been facing we get some major northerly
winds
here.
This time of year, yes, the last 10 days or so, and it looks like maybe the last day into Winnipeg I'll finally get a tailwind for the first time in about 3 weeks.
But on your website you talk about forgotten America and the fact that, you know, most of our media coverage comes out of big cities, and there's been a lot of talk lately about revitalizing small town America. Can you give us some examples of some stories that you've seen along the way?
Well, I've been through lots of towns. Houston's the only really large city. Otherwise, I've been in mostly smaller places as small as 100 people, and lots of towns the size of Thief River Falls in the $5,000 to $15,000 people range. And you find that some cities look pretty good. Some cities are still doing well. Some cities are even growing. Other cities are dwindling. And I've been trying to get a feel for why that is. Why are some places doing well and some places not so well? And the answers are not always the obvious ones.
one of the reasons why you didn't want to just take a car ride, for example, across the country, is that you want to learn a little bit about each of the places that you're stopping.
I'm traveling at 10 miles an hour, not at 60, not at 75. And when you travel that slow, you get a feel for places. I stop a lot. I talk to people. I go into cafes, libraries, taverns, wherever people are, and just kind of sit down and ask, what's here? Tell me about your town. And I've learned lots of interesting things and met a lot of fascinating people. I have one example that just leaps out. I was in Nacogdoches, Texas, which is in East Texas. It's a small university town. Stephen F. Austin State University is there. I'm in a coffee shop. There's a well-dressed older gentleman reading the newspaper at a corner table. And I finally get up the courage and I come over and say, mind if I talk to you? And he said, no, not at all. And I asked him what he did, and he said, I was a lawyer. And I said to him, what kind of lawyer? Thinking he'd tell me he was in criminal law or real estate law or whatever. He said, I was a good lawyer. And I thought, well, he's certainly not modest. Well, he had reason not to be modest. He was an aide to Lyndon Johnson and worked in the White House for 3 years.
Wow.
And I mean, he had fascinating stories to tell. And he was just this well-dressed older gentleman sitting in a coffee shop that I walked over and talked to.
So does that come naturally to you, to just walk up to a stranger and say, hey, do you mind if I sit and visit with you? Or do you tell them what you're up to first? Do you say,
well, I tried to tell them. I said, I'm not prying. I'm on this trip. I'm writing a book. I'm trying to understand who people are and what places are all about. And so, no, I don't suppose it comes naturally to me, but I've been a newspaper and magazine writer. And I mean, if you want to find things out, you have to ask people questions.
So what have you learned about northern Minnesota? Have you spent much time here?
I have never been up in this part of the state before. I've been over in the Boundary Waters at one point a long time ago. Been in southern Minnesota a lot, but have not been here in the northwest corner. What I've found about Thief River Falls is that every town I kind of have a hook that I try to hang it on. This seems almost Canadian to me. I mean, I feel like I'm back in familiar territory. It's close enough to Canada that there's something of a Canadian influence here, even in the way people talk.
Well, I'm fascinated to know some other details about almost Canadian. I'm not originally from northwest Minnesota, but I can detect a little bit of a difference, too, when I go back home, which is close to the Twin Cities, that there's a little difference in the culture.
Last night I stopped and had dinner at the, Eagles Club here, and what was there on the TV? On one TV, there was the hockey game. On the other TV, there was the baseball game. I mean, I could walk into a bar half a mile from my house at home and find the same things on the TV.
That sounds about right for this area, though. I grew up a little bit closer to the Canadian border, about 20 miles from there.
Okay.
Yeah, I grew up along 59 in the town of Lake Bronson.
I'll be through there.
Just remember to keep your eyes open when you pass through. It's kind of one of those towns along the stretch where if you don't pay attention, it goes by pretty fast. I got to ask you a question, Bill, to go off the bicycling for a moment. There's another good you have bicycling as one of your passions, and riding is as well. But tell us about the beer, the craft beer. How did you get involved with that, and what's the whistle, basically?
I've been a craft brewer. I've worked brewing beer for almost 2 years, but I didn't start out thinking that's what I ever wanted to do. I started brewing at home in the 1990s and just got fascinated by it. It's a combination of art and science, mm-hmm. and you really have to understand both parts of it in order to do it well. And I got totally hooked on it.
Well, yeah, it's not exactly sipping Schlitz Malt Bull in the back alley. This is beer. The craft beer industry has gone leaps and bounds, especially up here in other spots of the country. But up here, we've really noticed a resurgence of more beer and more of these craft beers in the past, like I said, 5-10 years. It's really boomed.
I think in 1979, there were something like 71 breweries left in the country. And now we're close to 5,000, which is a record historically.
Mm-hmm. So what's the beer that you you usually go for? What is out of the craft beer? Are you an IPA person? Well, what's the beer that you like that hits the palate just right?
I like a well-brewed beer, and so I'll look at see what they've got. If they have something unusual, a little out of the ordinary, that's the thing I will ask for a sample of.
What was the more unusual beer that you have sampled? That I mean, they've done so much with different things. They put coffee, and they vary. I've seen a Wheaties beer a couple of years ago. Well, what to you is the oddest beer that you've had that you've like? Oh, this wasn't so bad.
Lately, sour beers have become popular. They're brewing beers with lactic and bacterial cultures. Mm-hmm. I had a brew down in Marshall that was brewed with yogurt culture, and obvious combination for Minnesota, and local barley and the dairy industry, but it actually was pretty good. But I mean, you don't expect to walk into a craft brewery in a small town somewhere and find beers like that.
So do you plan your overnight stays in places that have craft breweries? Or, that would be a good way to end a day where you've been on the bike for miles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, somebody, I think, wrote on my blog with a list of some breweries. In fact, it was here in Minnesota, and I said, well, beer is God's gift to the thirsty bicyclist. And so when I can, if I'm through a town, I'll make a point to stop by the brewery.
We're joined in the studio this morning by Bill Pierce, who makes his home in Burlington, Ontario. He is a dual U.S.-Canadian citizen who is almost finished with a bike ride that he began 3 months ago that's taking him from Texas to Canada. What do you travel with on your bike, Bill?
Well, I've got about 70 pounds a gear this time, which is too much. But my wife insisted that I take enough survival kind of camping gear. I don't have a tent, but I've got a high-end ground cloth and a down sleeping bag and a pad that if I got caught out on a cold night, I could find a barn somewhere and sleep in. So that weighs. I've got my computers, I've got the chargers, all the high-tech equipment that when I traveled 30 years ago, none of that even existed. So it does add up. I pull it in a trailer, and it slows me down climbing the hills considerably.
How's the weather been as you've traveled?
Mostly good, but I finally ran into snow last week. I was down in Fergus Falls and had a pretty nasty day. I don't think it quite got to freezing and it spit ice pellets. But I'm equipped, if I can stay dry, down to about 25 degrees or so.
Mm-hmm. And the computers, you brought those along because you're blogging along the way.
I'm blogging the whole time. Every, on average, probably 3 or 4 days, I post a blog entry and some photos, and a couple of times I posted video.
I was reading that this morning before you stopped into the studio, and I'll tell you, I would love to take an adventure like this. Do you recommend it?
Yeah, I do, actually. If I had to say, what have I learned from the trip? It's two things. America is great. It doesn't need to be great again. It basically always was great. I see it every day. And the other thing is, you're never too old to learn things. I'm 69 years old, and I'm learning just as much as if I were 25.
Was your wife concerned about you take, because you're solo on this trip, right? You don't have anybody following you or anything?
I call her.
At least not that you know of.
Yeah, I mean, no, right. There better not be. But
No groupies on board.
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody following me on this kind of trip. My wife's big concern now is more, we're about 3 weeks ahead of you in terms of spring. And she said, I had to mow the lawn. The garden needs everything's coming up. The weeds are getting big. You've got to get back home.
You're ahead of us in Canada
I'm at about the same latitude as the Iowa-Minnesota border. And in terms of the climate, because of the Great Lakes, we're all right next to the lake. People can even grow azaleas, which you wouldn't find here in the Midwest until you got to, like, Kansas City.
So you're looking forward to getting home?
Kind of. Sleep in my own bed and not have to pack and unpack things every night. Sure. But on the other hand, this travel becomes addictive. This every day is a new place, new people, something new to learn. Gets a little bit under your skin.
So it's something that maybe you'll consider doing again?
Yeah. I may not do it again on a bike. My wife doesn't know this even. I have another book idea that I'm thinking about doing, but it probably involves research and travel by car.
We haven't talked a whole lot about the book, and we should. You've got a title for it already.
Yes, I call it Riding in the Springtime. That's my website, ridingintospringtime.com. And I hope to have the book finished by the end of the year.
And is this something that you've talked with a publisher about?
I have an agent who says he's interested, no promises. He wants to see an outline in 4 chapters by August, and he said if he likes it, he'll see what he can do about finding a publisher for it.
So take us through that process. Do you write as you go while things are still fresh in mind?
I try to. I mean, I've got a good memory, but it isn't perfect. And so I try to get the highlights down in the blog. And then when it comes time this spring, summer, that's going to be my main activity. I'll go over the blog, and I think it'll be enough to refresh my memory. And then I can elaborate and add more details that I can do in the blog.
It's almost like a rough draft in a way of...
In a sense, it is.
...of the book. And again, if you're interested in Bill's website, it's ridingintospringtime.com. And we've been talking with Bill Pierce. He is from Canada, and he's almost home on this long bike ride. Tell us a little bit more about your bike, Bill. Is this something that is built for such a long trip specifically?
No, it's a road bike, a pretty standard bike. I thought about how am I going to carry all the things I need to. My bike's 21 years old. It's got about 60,000 miles on it now, of which about 2,300 will be this trip. I realized I was going to have to pull a trailer, and they make nice little bicycle trailers that you can tow behind a bike, and that's where I put most of my gear. And then I have 2 large bags that sit over the rear wheel of the bike. But otherwise, I'm just out there. Oh, I put a little larger tires on it than I would if I were normally riding around. But otherwise, I really didn't make many changes to the bike at all.
How many sets of tires do you go through on a trip like that?
Oh, 1 set of tires. No reason. I've had a couple of flats. I shouldn't say that. But not since Oklahoma. And I'm pretty confident I'll make it till Sunday without having a flat tire. That being said, I may go out there tomorrow and run into something on the road and have a flat tire. You never know.
Well, with my luck, I've been more of a walker than a rider. My bike chain would have fell off like it was when I was a kid. I had the worst luck with bikes.
I've been working on bikes for 45 years. One of the things I like about bikes is they're very low technology, basic set of hand tools. I can fix 98% of what might go wrong on the bike myself on the road.
Have you had any encounters with wildlife?
No.
I mean, you're out there in open space. Yeah. I imagine you travel during daylight hours
only.
Yeah,
I do. But, I mean, somebody said, now that I'm up here in moose country, I better be careful for moose. I've seen some pretty interesting roadkill, I'll say that.
But no live critters, huh?
No, very few live critters.
Well, you're here on at the beginning of the week. The party animals don't come out till Friday.
Right, right. You'll be safely through here.
Yeah, you'll be good.
I have met a few of those, yeah.
You've been on bike for a long time. You've been riding since your mid-20s. And as you said, you're now 69 years old. And you estimate that you've ridden 125,000 miles.
I'd say so. I did years ago, 30 years ago in Europe, I did a tour for 11 months and I rode 15,000 miles on that particular trip. So I don't know. It was one of those things. Bikes got popular when I was in school in the early 70s, and I went out and bought a bike and thought, this is fun. And I've never stopped thinking that it wasn't fun, so I just keep doing it.
We started out by talking about my new Fitbit here. Do you have any idea how many calories you burn a day?
It varies, anywhere from maybe 2,000 in a short day to in a hard day with a lot of hills, over 4,000 calories. So I can eat almost what I want within...
And those craft beers might go down a little smoother at the end of the day.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Well, Bill, thanks so much for stopping in and sharing this fascinating journey with us. And again, we want to point people to your website, ridingintospringtime.com, and you can see where you've been. You've got photos there and some reflections on a few of the places that you've stopped. And then also be looking for that book to come out. What was the title again?
Riding into Springtime.
Riding into Springtime by Bill Pierce. We wish you safe travels the rest of the way, Bill.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.